What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're anyone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum, as well as they have mints. It has caffeine, L-theanine, vitamins B6 and 12, helps with memory and focus. I like to chew it really all the time. If I'm out driving around showing houses to my clients, making phone calls, I'll chew it before a workout. Really just anytime I feel like I need a little mental boost, I'll just pop a piece of NeuroGum, kind of gets me to where I need to be mentally.
Also, shout out to our people over at Captain Beard Co. So they make products for beards. So beard oil, balms, butters, all the things that you can think of that can help you maintain a healthy beard. And the great thing about it is they use all natural ingredients. They've also ventured out. They make body wash and candles. All their stuff smells amazing. And so if you want, check them out. And if you use the promo code Zach and Pat, that'll get you 10% off your purchase.
Now to introduce our awesome guest today. He's a friend of mine. He's a real estate investor, owner of a roofing company, the great and powerful Angelo Russo.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, man. We're really happy to have you. Angelo's a longtime friend of mine. We've done several deals together. He's a great investor here in town. He also owns an awesome roofing company that I definitely want to dive into because I know that's kind of a newer venture for him. But yeah, Angelo, if you could just kind of tell the people listening a little bit about yourself, kind of give us your origin story.
Origin story. Okay. Started out selling door-to-door satellite once upon a time. Crushed it. Easiest thing in the world for me.
Satellite? Just,
like DirecTV.
DirecTV? Yep. Okay.
Because I just got to talk to people all day. In the process, you help them out, you get paid. So to me, door-to-door is scary for most people. It's just like cold calling. They're going, I can't do this. You know, it's like, we know if you hang up on that person's never going to talk to you. Did it for a year. Came home. I was living in Columbia at the time. Came home. And my
is that where you went to college?
No. So okay. I didn't go to school. Did that for a couple of years. Young. Made a bunch of money. That was awesome. You're 22, living at home, no bills.
Yeah.
And you're just printing money, helping people, right? So that was kind of my first professional job, so to speak.
And how old are you?
I'm 21, 20. 22, 23. Yeah. And I had a friend that worked through the team member system at State Farm and opened up his own agency, and he reached out and he said, hey, you're working that side of the claim. Why don't you come over here? The opportunity isn't the same initially, but long term you can make more. So I kind of had a come to Jesus moment, like, what do I want to do with my life? My grandpa was a big State Farm agent way back in the day. And I had that kind of legacy type allegiance to it, to the idea we had lake houses and boats. All the kids and grandkids were being spoiled. So I thought, hey, if I just invest a little bit of time now, I can have that same lifestyle too. And I made the jump from roofing to insurance. So that was 2017. Did that until kind of the tail end of 2020, early 21.
Well, that's how you and I met originally.
Yeah. So initially, your old business partner and I connected, some sort of networking event. And then I got in touch with you. Chemistry was there. We helped each other a ton during that time. And I learned a lot. That was kind of the developmental years of business, right? When you're young, hungry, grinding, you don't have any opportunities coming to you. You got to go out and get all of them. We kind of attach at the hip, and that was a start of something great for us.
For sure.
So did that. 21, lost my job. Which W-2, kind of the benefit of being an employee is like security, right? You get a check every 2 weeks.
Right, but it's not guaranteed.
No, it is absolutely not. And I found out hard way. I was telling Pat kind of before this that I did what I'm still convicted to this day was the right thing to do. And corporate State Farm. So I was in the investor network, wrote a lot of business for a lot of the investors. And at that time, I had a new customer that I onboarded, he had 40 rentals. I wanted the business. So I presented a quote for a rental, and at the time State Farm had a discount and said, hey, if you have new utilities, we'll give you a discount. So HVAC, plumbing, electric, all that stuff. And I wrote it with the discount. I said, hey, you got 30 days to get this back to me. And you know, otherwise they're going to bill you. So 30 days passes by, he doesn't furnish that, and calls me flying off the rail, screaming at me like, you're a scam artist. Fuck you. I can't believe this. And I'm not any of those things. So I was like, look, I want to show you in good faith. I did the right thing here. I'm going to take ownership of this. And I actually paid the discount. It was like $100 because I wanted the business, yeah. One, but two, I felt like, you know, as a operator, like that's the right thing to do. Somehow, some way, there was a miscommunication, and I'm going to take ownership of that and make it right. So I did that. Corporate State Farm called him back on the complaint follow-up, and he told him, yep, Angelo took care of it. It's all good. And the next day, they stripped my license. So, you know, going to work the next day, and they're like, you can't operate. But, you know, at this point, I got like a pit in my stomach. I'm going on. Come to find out, it was that whole situation. New stuff. I mean,
did you have your own branch?
No, so I worked under an agent. And I was pursuing my own, you know, like multiple recognitions for high producing sales, life insurance sales, all that stuff. Like it was in the works very soon, and abrupt halt to that. So that was kind of my moment of reflection, like. Do all the right things, or at least what you believe is the right thing, and there's still that possibility that you're not going to get a check the next 2 weeks. So, Kinsey, my long-term girlfriend, and I sat with that for a minute and just kind of, we had a little bit of money, like our bills weren't very high, so we had the opportunity to kind of think, like, what's our next step? So for me, always had an interest in real estate. I'm working kind of adjacent to the real estate industry, but I didn't want to like sell houses, you know, the traditional real estate route. So I always knew kind of the investor side of it was built for me. And at that point you get here. It's weird. I like the day I left, there was no stress. There was no like anxiety, and here I'm not making any money. Right. And you think, oh shit, I'm going to go broke. None of that was there. We're in the middle of our first 75 hard, which I will say I attribute a lot of the, you're busy doing all the things. You don't have time to panic. You don't have time. So I felt super clear. Like my shoulders dropped 2 inches. I was relaxed, and I felt like I could make a decision to move forward from a solid foundation. So for me, that was real estate. And that's how I got into it. And you were there kind of the whole infancy of that business.
I can remember.
Yeah. So I didn't make money for 10 months. You're just living off of debt and savings and putting shit on credit cards. And,
this was in 2020?
Early 21.
Okay.
10 months, no check. I was spending that time working on the house that we were living in, rehabbing. But really just trying to like get in shape. Figure out what are the next steps. So fast forward, I did my first wholesale deal.
Yeah.
And that, to me, I think I made $2,500 or $2,800 on it. But now,
for the people listening who don't know what wholesaling real estate is, can you give us like a little breakdown of that? Obviously,
yeah, you know, so you're a deal hunter, bird dog. You go out and find and negotiate a property that someone's motivated to sell, get a good deal on it, and in the midst of that, put it under contract as if you're going to buy it, to find another buyer to take your place. At the time, I didn't have the cash to do it. I knew that. I knew I had to get a screaming deal on it so someone else could step in and close for me. You assign all your interest in that property over. It's going to show up, fund the deal, and make the difference there.
Right. So you say, hey, I'm going to buy your house for $100,000, and then you come to this investor and you're just like, all right, I'll sell it to you for $103,000 or whatever it was. Exactly. You know, So, and then you make that $3,000 or
so they step in on your behalf. They show up to the title company. They fund it. They close. They receive the property. Right. You make arbitrarily the difference between what you contracted the first time and what you contracted with the person that steps in to buy it. So that one, I'll never forget. It was in Baldwin, right? Kind of that town and country area. I met with an old lady. She had an elderly daughter, so I don't know how old she was, but probably 80. Lived in it since it was new. You can imagine in your head what that looks like. Uh-huh. So pink tile, you know, fuzzy toilet seats, like all kinds of grandma shit.
Yeah.
And I knew that comps were strong in the area. It's a desirable place to live. So I went in there. I put in an offer at 285, and I come to find out I wasn't the highest offer. But she liked me for whatever reason. So we put that under contract. I put that under contract for 285. I sold it for 287.8. It was like 25 or 2800 bucks. My buddy Ryan bought it, stepped in, did a six-figure rehab on the place, and sold it for like 585.
Damn.
So he made net to him after fees, holding costs, all of the shit, $100,000+. That was kind of the start.
Yeah.
So in my little brain, it was proof of concept. I can do this. It's legal. It's ethical. And I just printed this money using my network.
Just all you.
Right. So the lesson there was, one, I have all of the information I need to execute. Two, I'm leveraging the people I know, my network. I'm tapping into that potential to make money by helping. So that's kind of been the theme. Like, I always try to find some way to position myself to help, and that's how I get paid. Pat and I were talking earlier. It's like, what do you do? Well, I roof and I buy real estate, but more or less, I just solve problems, complicated problems, pain in the ass problems. I put out fires from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. at night, all day, every day. And in the space between, I get paid to do it. So
yeah,
that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. Yeah.
So now roofing and real estate.
Yeah. So, all right. So, you know, you're still obviously doing the real estate, primarily wholesaling. I know you've done some flips and stuff too, you know, and you've kind of gotten into that, but recently you've gotten into roofing or gotten back into roofing. I should say.
So, it's a good point that I'm glad you brought up. I'm getting back into the space. So, there was no learning curve there. The industry changes over time, and it's been probably a decade since I last did it, but it was muscle memory. So it was very low friction opportunity for me. A buddy of mine had started his own company. So 2017, he left the company we previously worked for, started his own. I'd maintained friendship with him the whole time. And at that point, I want to say it was February, March of this year, he started talking about what it would look like to get involved. And he's an awesome dude, awesome business platform. So the ratings are all great. Brand is really strong. We're reputable. I have a huge customer base that speaks highly of us. So that's the lifeblood of a roofing operation is reputation. So he had already built the platform and had a glorified job in a sense where he's making awesome money, but he's the business, right? And for me, the opportunity there was to come in and get systems built out or SOPs figured out, the processes around what does this thing look like to get you out of daily operations, and I know how to scale. So for me, my position is kind of operations now. I'm still in the field selling, still on my ass off, help a ton of people in the St. Louis area with that. But critical pieces, you don't have duplicate skill sets. He's good at these things, I'm good at these things, and it's kind of a good opportunity for me to get in there.
Symbiotic partnership, man.
Start hiring some people, training them up, building out the foundation wide so we can grow tall. Yeah, so been doing that. March 3rd, I signed the paperwork, and then March 14th, O'Fallon got hit with a massive national news storm. That was like my first week.
Just got bombarded.
Yeah.
Baptism by fire.
Yeah, exactly. So It's been great. You'll never hear me complain about it. It's a good busy, a productive busy. As I was saying to Pat earlier, I don't like busy that doesn't produce some sort of result, whether that's financial, physical, emotional, whatever. It is the silliest thing ever to me. So for me, it's been a lot of productive busy. And I'm not going to complain about it. It's a good place to be in right now.
Sure.
So what are some of your guys' goals for the roofing company? Where do you see yourself going with that?
So I guess the end goal would be to exit, sell it for a profit, right? So it's hard to do that when you're a one-man show, right? You print a lot of money, making great money personally to live off of, lifestyle money. But in terms of an attractive business, no company or private equity group is going to come in and buy a business that's just one dude.
Right. That I don't want to just take over your spot and live your hell.
So for me, the end goal, the vision there is to bring in systems to where you could hire a chimpanzee off the street to do what we do, because we're so systematized, so process oriented that now you can duplicate it and pump some money into it and scale it up. So what does that look like? Well, for us, it's building out the infrastructure, bringing on new talent, and getting them to a point where they're successful. Because I can do it. I have history with this. Partner can do it because what he knows, and he's great at it. But how can we get it to where we can take someone young and hungry, give them an opportunity and a platform to sell, and get them to do it, right? And that's the biggest challenge I've ever come across professionally.
I was going to say, how's it trying to hire people to come in and hire good workers and people that actually want to work?
Truthfully, it's the biggest growth I've ever had to go through. Because you think, because I can do it, I can get someone else to do this thing.
Yeah, but no one else has that drive.
No one cares. It never translates. So, again, the reason I say systems and processes is because, yeah, I can train you. We can ride around a truck all day. You can see what I do. Are you going to go do those things?
Right. And you're going to do it the way that I'm doing it.
No. And it takes a lot of acumen. So you got to know about manufacturer specs. You got to know about the insurance process. You got to know about all of the construction side of things too. It's not just selling. Right. And I'm kind of uniquely qualified in that I worked in the insurance world. So I know policy information and I know the construction side. And that's been a huge benefit for me, but not everyone we hire is going to have that, right? So one, how can I train somebody
to have your knowledge of that? Of those
right.
Things.
So that's kind of the education part of it, but they need the experience part of it too. If you fuck up a deal, that feeling, that pit in your stomach is so gross that you never want to do it again.
Oh yeah. I just had that recently with someone that Zach had talked to and had that buying over in Illinois.
Yeah.
Well, no, I got a message from an agent over in Illinois saying, hey, can you send this pre-approval over for so-and-so? And I was like, I don't know who that is. He goes, well, he said he's working with you. I was like, oh, fuck. So I'm like, immediately, I was like, did you refer him over to you? He goes, no, Zach did. And I was like, oh, fuck. So I'm going back through every application I've ever taken, going through my phone, looking for names, numbers, all of that stuff. And finally, I'm just like, I just text Zach. I go, hey, did you refer this person over to me? He goes, yeah. I said, fuck, when did you do that? He goes, I don't know, like last Thursday or Friday when I met with him. I was like, and this was like Monday. And I was like, oh, God, thank you. I was like, he must not have called me.
Yeah, I sent him your number, and I guess he just
So I reached back out. I was like, yeah, I was having a heart attack. Like yeah. I was freaking.
I could tell you were texting me like frantically at like 9:30 at night.
Yeah, I was like, oh, how did I fuck this up? And like, because that's my thing is like, as soon as you send me a lead, I'm immediately reaching out to him. Like, right. Right then and there, like with a text,
business 101.
Yeah, with a text,
you got to do it. Otherwise, you're gonna forget.
With speed delete. Yeah, with a text or a phone call. Usually with a text, just trying to set up a phone call, and so I'm like freaking out, and but then Zach's like, yeah, you gave me your information last week. I was like, oh, okay. So I text the agent that he's working with over in Illinois. I'm like, yeah, hey, I haven't heard from him. So And then he came back. He's like, oh, yeah, he's working with someone else at Guild that helped him buy his other house. I'm like, man, you motherfucker gave me a heart attack. Like, texting me at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, asking for a pre-approval letter from somebody that I haven't even heard of. And I was like, oh, my God. No, I get that. Man, I have the biggest pit, but I just completely fucked something up.
The piece for me is education, right? I can tell you what we're doing until you're blue in the face or I'm blue in the face. But you also need the experience facet that, You mess up. There's nothing in this industry that can be catastrophic. We can fix anything that's a problem. And we do. It's construction. It happens. People are kind of, consumers are immune to, we got a roof put on. But if you think about it, we're stripping off the weather protection to the thing that you spent the most money on.
Right.
Right. There's a lot of liability in that. And it is construction. Stuff does go wrong. But that's part of the reputable piece that fix it. We stand behind it. It might be a process. It might not go smooth, but at the end of it, it will be better than when we started. So the education piece, we want systems around. That's kind of what I'm implementing now. How do we take someone totally green, give them the platform to be successful? But the experience is where the talent now, I feel like, doesn't want to figure it out, right? There's an autonomy piece that you, yourself, I want. Like, give me control of the ball. Let me do something. I don't want to be constricted by kind of corporate guidelines or whatever that looks like for you. So initially, I've had good success getting the education piece down, but it's the experience. They have to want to work. You got to want to fuck it up and fix it. That's just how this industry works. And you're going to learn more in that little lesson then you're going to learn from 10 deals that go perfect.
I think that applies to just about every industry, really.
That's right.
I mean,
people are afraid to fail, though. Like, that's the thing is, like, I don't know where, if it's going back to schools or what, but I feel like people are just afraid to fail.
I was.
Yeah,
I can speak to that, but I don't know what Enneagram I am or what personality type I am. I'm perfectly okay with being wrong. I'm perfectly okay with fucking stuff up. Because I know the immediate thing is to find a solution. So I don't live in this world of problems. I live in the solutions world. For me, I'm okay with being wrong because now I learned. I want to get better. I have a desire to be smarter, more wise, you know, more equipped. And you learn more by being wrong than you are being right all the time. It doesn't make sense to me with politics or whatever the hell people are currently talking about. You want to prove your point so bad that you're not okay with being wrong.
Right.
What is it? Thomas Edison that said, he's like, no, I didn't fail 10,000 times. I just learned 10,000 ways not to make a light bulb.
Right.
Yeah. I think people are just so afraid of being wrong. People are so married to their ideas. You know, it's like you can change your mind on things.
It didn't used to be this way. People were open to having, you know, constructive conversations. And now I think, like, a battle. Like, I don't want to go into anything. Like, it's a battle, you know, and we can talk about whatever controversial topic you want, but I'm here to either learn something or educate something.
Well, yeah, I think we were just talking about that with our last guest where he was asking us about effective communication, and it comes down to effective listening. Like, you have to listen to learn and understand, not listen to respond.
Which I struggle with. I'm a talker. So I get fired up and I just start talking, and it's taken years to dial that back and figure out, like, in sales, in any vertical, I don't care if you sell, you know, soda products to a gas station or if you sell financial service or whatever it is, you got to learn to ask questions so you know what problem you're actually solving.
Right.
Yeah. And then the positioning part's easy, right?
Right.
But that was a massive struggle for me, just being a extroverted, charismatic talker. I had to step back and be like, okay, I'm not selling shit. Why? And then it's, oh, you're not finding out what the real problem is. Right. Get the smoke screen and you talk about that all you want. That doesn't convert over to solving a real problem. Objection handled.
Totally agree.
So you feel like you've come a long way in that sense?
Yeah, professionally I laugh. Like I'm not supposed to be here. I'm not, this to me is just bizarre that my little self is out in the world, like, doing cool things. Historically, I thought I was going to be a W-2 guy for the rest of my life. and shit changes quick. So I'm happy.
Yeah.
Things, awesome. Things are going good right now. And I, you know, as a visionary, it's nice to have partners in the space that are implementers, right? Because you can visualize all you want, what a business looks like, what you want, et cetera, but you got to actually do the shit to get there. So I feel like I'm surrounded by a good group of guys right now that we have the tools and resources to do shit. So excited.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned it before, but I mean, and this is something you and I have talked many, many times about, but like how important our networks are and like the people that we know and the people that we associate with, because especially in the real estate industry here in St. Louis, it's a small.
Yeah. St. Louis is the biggest small town.
Yeah. Right? I mean, everybody seems to know everybody. I mean, you're like, oh yeah, a couple guests ago. Yeah. I know his business partner and like all these people that you just, it's like all connected. And yeah. Like, it'd be funny. We'll have people over and like Pat goes, oh, I think I remember you from hockey when we were kids. You know, it's like all these like crazy, like just networking, but it's small. And so I think just having a good network of people is just, I mean, and especially in the real estate industry,
right?
If you muddy your name here, or
it is quick to spread wide.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, just look at the, you know, what happened with some of the contractors you guys used, Matt used. I mean, that, like, that shit spread quick.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a problem.
Yeah.
So. Well, so we're talking about networks and reputations. To me, in high school, I partied my ass off. So that was my reputation.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the fun guy. And it got dark. Like I was using drugs, alcohol, all that stuff. So I feel like professionally when I stepped into the working world, people just associated that dude at the party.
Yes.
The dude with the drugs, the dude, the party guy.
Yeah. The dude who's falling down drunk, the dude who's thrown up.
I had to work my ass off to be professionally forward, you know, to be trustworthy. And now I seek it out. If I go to hire a contractor and they were, you know, a drug addict or went to jail or whatever, but they're presenting themselves professionally forward now, I know the secret sauce there is that guy has a reputation that he built. He's willing to do whatever the hell he can to protect it because he knows what it's like to have a shitty reputation. I say that my reputation wasn't terrible, but again, it was, you know, irresponsible partying, all this stuff. And now I'm like controlling people's finances, insuring their properties, like putting a roof on their house, doing all this stuff. You have to have the trust. So for me, that reputation, my professional reputation, means more because of my past. I had to work my ass off to gain people's trust. I had to work my ass off to be reputable, to be someone you could rely on. And that is what I hang my hat on. I'm dependable. If you need X out of me, you're going to get it, right? And I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make sure that happens because I don't want people to associate me, especially in this little St. Louis network, with slimy, wouldn't do business with him. Or no, you. How many deals have you guys done where it's Angelo put Zach's name in your phone? This is the agent you call. Don't even bother,
yeah.
Right? Because I know your reputation. I know you as a person, and that's how it works. Networking is like giving a referral. That's what I do. Here's your flooring guy. You're gonna call him. Don't waste your time. Trust me. I've gone through the headaches of hiring other guys. This is your guy. Right.
Learn from my mistakes.
Well, that's I think that's why, you know, we make the money that we make is because we've done the trial and error. We've built the networks. We know who's good and who's not. And, you know, there's a monetary value that goes to that.
100%. So when I first started, I was young, kind of a punk, arrogant, new in business. And I always wanted to go to the titan of the industry, whether it's, you know, owners of mortgage companies or owners of real estate brokerages. And I wanted to work with them. And I realized these dudes have a guy from 35 years back. They were both doing business together and now they're inseparable.
Right.
My little value proposition isn't going to get anywhere between those two guys. So quickly learned, why don't I just attach to the guys that are young and hungry because of their trajectory? And then Zach and I got involved and now 15, 20 years from now, like there's not going to be a single new up and comer that's going to get between us because of that rapport.
I totally agree. Yeah, I mean, I constantly have, you know, we've talked about it, I think on the last show, just lenders reaching out to me all the time. And I mean, primarily I send almost everybody I work with to Pat, and the occasional people, you know, that want to work with other people, that's totally fine. But like, if you want my referral for the best lender in St. Louis, it's this guy right here. But it's just, people are always, they're always reaching out and trying to get the business. And it's, you know, it's frustrating, and it's, but it is, it's like, man, I've created this relationship with him. It's like, I would never want to jeopardize that because of all the stuff that him and I do together and the relationships we've built and we know it works. I know it works. I know he's very, very good at what he does. I'm not going to, you know, the day of closing, something's not going to go wrong, or he's there every single time.
It's not just about money, right? We make money together collectively, but the massive piece is effective.
Yes.
You know, if you pass it off to Pat, he's going to represent your customers the best way. He's going to get it done.
Yes.
Why do we know that? Well, we have a big track record.
Yeah, there's like 50 plus deals probably at this point.
Yeah, something.
Like, right. So, like, yeah, you can do that, but the effectiveness is what gets stuff done and what gets us paid in my profession.
For sure.
Right. There's roofers are just like real estate agents. They're plentiful.
Yeah, same. I'm telling the long
effective side. Roofers are different. And especially now, you know, not to get too niche on this, but we work in insurance restoration. 90% of our business is through insurance restoration. I do roofs for our investor friends that are doing a flip, and we're very competitive on that, but majority of it is insurance because it pays well. So for me, understanding these insurance companies are for-profit businesses. They have massive losses. The reinsurance groups have massive losses because of landslides, wildfires, hurricanes, tornadoes, hailstorms. They're losing their assets right now. And I have no doubt that there's top-down pressure for them to, hey, tighten up a little bit on the settlement, right? So as someone that has written those policies, I know the mechanics of them. The homeowner's getting shafted. It's not me. It's not the insurance company, right? It's like, right, this person's not getting the money they need to get their house back to pre-storm conditions, which is the contract you sign and pay premiums on. So for me, being effective is understanding the nuance there and how do I navigate that for homeowner and get them result. And that's why I say I'm uniquely qualified, because I have both sides of the spectrum. I go in and I negotiate like hell to get results for these homeowners, because I'm not beholden to these insurance companies, right? Like, they make billions of dollars and they're worried about a $15,000 claim. Let's get them the results they need. And that's what I'm good at. That's the kind of catalyst in this business for me, just being effective, right? All the networking is great, but you can't fulfill. What are we doing?
Right. Those referrals are going to stop coming in.
100%. Right. And I've done them all, the BNI groups and the real estate meetups. I did that every freaking week. I felt like I was in four or five different meetups. But at the end of it, not many of them are effective. And sorry, you're listening in those groups with me. I'm not talking about you, but you understand what yeah. I mean. Everyone wants to earn your business or make money off of your back.
Sure.
Not what we do. It's money is secondary to us, at least. At least that's how I feel. It's put the ball in Zach's court and let him run with it, and he'll score every time. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, absolutely.
You get bombarded. My phone blows up from dust to dawn.
Yeah, me too.
People wanting some sort of access to us.
Yes.
You got to be protective. Everyone's got a ball of defense.
Yeah, that's something I've gotten a lot better at, especially this last year. Ever since we've had our second kid, like I've got to really budget my time and like not give people that are not deserving of my time when I, especially if I don't have it, if I'm with my kids or if I'm spending time with Gina or whatever, I'm getting way better at like not getting my time stolen from me.
And that's, I know you were talking about trying to have kids, and that's something that, I mean, make sure you've got those systems in place. I know you're big on the systems. So once you have those kids and start having kids, that's that 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. is going to get cut. You know, that's the biggest thing that I've learned through my divorce was, and we talked about this before, was, not saying that I didn't put my kids first, but I kind of used it as a crutch to where I could lean on at the time, my wife, now ex-wife, to handle certain things with the kids while I could still work and made that the priority. Not saying that I put my work in front of my kids and my wife at the time. And now that, it took that divorce to shift that perspective.
Right.
When I have my kids and I put the phone, no work calls, no nothing like that. When I have them, it's when I don't have them. Now I'll do that, 7 to 10.
That goes back to learn hard lessons. For guys like us who have a desire to be better, you never want to feel that way again. Right?
Right.
Like, I bet now in your mind, you're like, divorce isn't even an option.
No.
Right?
Never going to have it again.
That feeling, I never want to feel it again, and I'll do whatever necessary to prevent that from happening.
Right.
And that's, so we've been together almost 8 years. And people are like, why aren't you married? Why don't you have kids?
I've always wanted to ask that. I don't think I ever have.
People see from social media or interacting with us that we're a power couple. People look up to us. I've had friends tell us that, like, you guys are awesome. We want to model our relationship off of you, which is humbling and amazing. But the piece that people don't see is like the hard work that you do behind the scenes when you're having difficult conversations about, hey, this is terrifying to me. How do we fix this? Or, hey, this makes me feel this way. What can we do to make this happen less? Right. And now I have the utmost confidence that when we get married and have kids, that this is the hard work we've already done. That we're not going to be in a position 5 years from now going, this ain't going to work,
Right.
And to me, it's probably from some childhood traumas and things like that. And for her, just security issues. But like, we made it understood from the beginning of when we started dating, this is intentional. We're in this to be married and have a family. And we have done the work, seen therapists, worked on ourselves both individually and together. So now I feel like I do have a basis to do those things, but outwardly facing, everyone always says, well, why aren't you guys married? It's just a societal thing.
It's,
right?
I mean, I am married, but it's also like, I mean, what, be honest, like the day that I got married, what changed other than the fact that Gina's last name changed? We still have separate bank accounts. We have one conjoined. It's like everything is pretty much the same other than her last name changed. And I was like, we were together for 9 years before we got married, and
now the government's involved now.
Yeah, now it's like now you have this contract that now if we did break up, it's going to be a lot messier.
Right.
It's just like but I have no intention of any of that anytime soon.
I don't recommend it.
or ever.
I feel like you guys can both relate.
For sure.
Timing is what you want. It could have been 3 months.
Yeah.
And we're married. Whatever works for you, do that. But we're just intentional. And to back up a little bit, I came from a single parent household. So I'm sure when I was a kid, I made up my mind that I didn't want that to be the case. I didn't want to co-parent. I didn't want to have all of the stress that I had as a kid on my kids. So breaking that generational kind of issue is important to me. And Kinsey's parents are married for 30 something years. So I get to steal the example that they've put together, for us and model our relationship around that. But I wasn't dating chicks high school and beyond for funsies, right? Like, as a man, you still need those emotional connections. And I was able to navigate that, but I always knew, like, I'm going to marry this chick, whoever it is. And then that was 2017. It's now 24. Yeah. So yeah, it's been great. She's my ride or die.
She's awesome.
She's fucking awesome. Anyone that knows her knows that she's awesome. But I don't think professionally I could get to where I am had I not, one, had the support, but two, just had the confidant.
Yeah.
Someone that gets it and that's in your corner no matter what. To me, it's a superpower. in life and business.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I don't know where I'd be without Gina. I mean,
shout out to you girls if you're listening.
Ladies.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know where I'd be without her just because she totally reels me back in because I think I'd fly. I always make this joke that I'm a balloon and she's like the anchor because otherwise, I mean, I'd be off. I'm very quick to jump and say yes and do things. Like I'm a go doer. Well, we'll figure it out later kind of thing. And she's like more of the, all right, wait, where are we going? What's the plan? And
I'm organization.
Like, oh. Yeah. And I'm like, I didn't think about that. Okay. And, there's so many aspects or in so many instances where that would have got, things could have gone horribly wrong, but thankfully she.
Well, relationally, this translates to every other facet of your life, right?
Yes.
It's balance, but also organization and effort. So for me, that's the piece I was missing. I always had the effort. It was the balance and organization that I couldn't really get my head around. Maybe that's adult ADHD or personality types, whatever the hell it is, but having her is the yin and yang, the opposing force in the equation. And to me, it's been probably the biggest catalyst for me professionally, having that at home.
And I'll say from, being the opposite of that, being single with no relationship, but having a strong relationship with my ex-wife. I mean, even though we're not married, we're still, I mean, she's in a relationship. I support her goals. She supports mine. And we still have a better relationship now than we did when we were married. People that have listened know this but yeah, I mean, it's tough, trying to balance everything as a single dad and
one man show
and making sure you don't, be the balloon that flies off. Those kids are my anchors now. It gets tough. You're handling a hell of a lot more than what you had to do before. I mean, it's just like anything. You if you have a solid partner in anything, whether it's business or in your personal life, it's going to make your life easier. You have, you talked about the partner that you have now for your roofing. It's a similar concept.
Ham and egg. Yeah.
Similar concept within who it is that you're dating. I forget. Was it Adam that came on and was talking about Marburger? Who was talking about about having a solid partner? Was that him mentioning that?
So. Yeah. It's also been the biggest detriment in other ventures. And you get involved with shitty partners.
Right.
It's the opposite, right?
Yes, I've seen it.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
from experience, I can speak from a place where I've seen it both ways. But one, partnerships are huge. And two, when I was single, I was working on myself. You can't have two halves that make a whole. There's no such thing. If you have holes in yourself, this person has holes, like, you're not going to be compatible with anybody. So you have a unique opportunity I can master myself. And now the next relationship I'm in, we can be whole. You know what I mean by that?
Like, yeah, that's like my biggest thing with the, I've dated a couple people since the divorce. And that was the thing, was just like, I just need to take time to myself, figure myself out, like, and work on who I am as a person. So the next person that I am with, like, they're getting the best version
of myself.
Hopefully
they're doing the same thing too, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to, it's like a liability. This is twisted in my mind, but I try to limit liabilities and exposure. And if I'm working to be whole and complete, fully faceted myself, you're not, you don't work.
Right.
Right. For you, when you do meet someone that has been working on themselves and has worked on that trauma and has worked on their kind of pitfalls, now it's perfectly symbiotic, right?
If you can't love yourself, how are you supposed to love someone else,
Or give them an example of how to love you.
Right.
Yeah.
That's good. I've worked through it. I have a shrink / therapist that's like, for me, divine intervention, she was the right one. I got her the first time. But she's very business focused. She's a professional speaker. She consults with high level execs and she understands that world. So she understands the emotional side, but also like she can relate to some of the stress that we deal with as self-employed people. And some of the work I had with her was like just the ugliest, nastiest shit that I've ever had to deal with. But on the other side of it was a blank slate. Now because I know these things, I can be better. And I, after that, probably last year.
Oh, you started seeing her last year?
Yeah, I wanted to walk out of the building and just scream at every man on the planet to go see a therapist.
I am 100% with you on that. It's insane. I started going in 2021. And so I've got my business coach and then I've got my therapist. So like, and it's great because I go every other week to, or I go every other week to my therapist and then every other week as call with my coach. So it's like every week I'm
getting the accountability.
Yeah. And it's awesome. I highly, highly recommend it. And I love both my coach. I love my coach and I love my therapist. I mean, I haven't told my therapist because he's a little bit older and I don't know how much longer he's going to be doing it, but
you can't retire.
I told him, I'm like, I was like, I'm going to be calling your ass. And in the day that you pass away, I'm going to be sitting at your grave talking to your gravestone because I mean, he's helped me out so much.
Well, from a men's perspective, nobody wants to admit they need help.
No. That's how we were raised and the generation before us was like, you put your emotions away. You don't have emotions. But that's bullshit. Like
be a man.
Be a man. No emotions. Fuck that.
I think the most masculine thing you can do is admit that you got work to do.
Absolutely. Be vulnerable.
Yeah. Oddly enough, it is attractive, right? To maybe not open up to women, but to like admit that, hey, I've got problems that I need to address and need work. Right.
I mean, it totally says something about
you're a pansy. Like, no, I'm going to be better than you.
Right.
You think like that. But that was it for me is getting the help that no one else could provide that type of unique help for me, at least not in my relationship. My parents weren't relatable. My business partners are like, you're fucking crazy, whatever. But you need to be understood. And when I got that, I wanted to open up a nonprofit and I may still do that, but I wanted to get men in front of the resources they need for that kind of shit. Cause dudes are struggling. There's no way around it. Just society.
Men, I'll go in with you on that. That's a hell of an idea.
Men are struggling right now, and they need those resources, but they're, one, not equipped to pay for it. Two, don't know how to seek it.
Right.
But just
because it's not something you want to like advertise to the world that you're looking for.
No, hell no. And then your ego gets pushed aside, and you realize like how powerful it is to have someone like that in your corner. And dude, like I said, I walked out of the building. I just want to scream it, like get a fucking radio ad that, dudes, you're feeling like this, go seek help because it gives you the tools. They're not doing the work for you. They're just telling you what to grab on when you have, certain things come up and equipping you with the right tools. And it makes you a powerhouse in life and business.
Well, that we've talked about, and this is part of why we're doing this show. We've both been very open about stuff like this. And, I just think that it's one of those things where it's a stigma that's been put out there that you're not, as a man, you're not supposed to have feelings and emotions. And that's bullshit.
So bizarre to me.
And I think the earlier you can get started in, the better. Like kids out of college, like seriously, like you're coming out of a time in your life where, like you said, party. Like, I mean, I was in college. We went to the same college, but like partying and all this and didn't really have responsibilities. And now you're getting thrust into the real world. And now you've got
rent, car,
right.
Insurance,
student loans.
Yeah. And it's like how like that's a whirlwind for people. But I mean, men or women, like get in as soon as you can to speak with somebody to help you navigate these things that you're feeling, because you try to do it on your own and you try and suppress them even worse.
It's a dead end, right? Yeah. If you're only equipped to handle a problem the same way every time that problem comes up, you're going to get the same.
Yeah.
Why would, it's like, I want to lose weight, but you keep doing the same diet and it's not working. Like it's insane to do that. That's all it was for me, was just getting equipped with the right tools. Now I can call on those tools as needed. There's nothing like.
What would some of those tools be? If you don't mind elaborating.
Yeah, so it's more the psychology piece for me. Like, I'm very justice-driven. So if someone says the sky's purple today, my personality will not allow me to let them think that. Like, no, it's blue, dude. You're dead wrong. But I feel this extreme call to let them know that. And it's not effective. So if you get in an argument with your partner, wife, spouse, whoever, and you keep doing that same thing, like, no, you're wrong. Well, it's like, maybe they're not wrong. Maybe they're right from their perspective. So just stepping out of that conversation and realizing, like, oh, they think this. I think this. We really want the same thing. But while you're in the heat of it, you can't effectively come to terms that we're on the same team. So that was a massive one, is like, always work through problems from a place of facing each other with it. And we're on the same team with this. We want the same result. But two, just having the knowledge that, like, I have a traumatic upbringing on paper. I don't feel that way. Kinsey, my girlfriend, has the perfect upbringing on paper. That uniquely handicapped both of us. So for her, both parents are married, have been, they love each other. She was in a good financial situation growing up, had all the opportunities she wanted. So how does she have trauma, right? Where single parent, my mom was a stripper and a junkie. My dad was a drug user and drug dealer, went to prison. I was a self-parented child, like all this stuff. It's easy to make sense out of how I have trauma. But for her, why does she have trauma? Well, you learn that conflict is scary for her because she had such an easy life. She's not used to conflict. So it feels like her walls are crumbling in.
Someone has a disagreement with her.
Right. So imagine from my perspective, I go straight to conflict. That's the problem.
That's home.
Let's find the solution. I'm so justice driven that I just have to get the hard shit because I know that the problem can be solved. So imagine person's afraid of conflict and person seeks conflict, get together. Well, I'm ineffective at communicating now. I would have never learned that had I not gone and got professional help. Now, instead of going straight to conflict, I have to pause and say, hey, are you in a headspace where we can talk about this? And she has to posture up and go, yep, I'm ready. And then we can address it together. Whereas before, I'm just hammering this wounded person with, we need to fix this, right? And it all comes to a head eventually, whether it's 2 months, 2 years, 20 years. You're not conducive. This isn't going to work long term. That's why I said doing the work, getting the professional help, setting up that foundation for us. Now I feel like we can get married. We have businesses together. We can have kids. We can blossom. Whereas before, I'm just some big dumb idiot who's trying to like brunt force his way through a problem that requires finesse. And professionally, I do the same thing.
So the same way.
Go get help. Even if you don't think you have problems, like I was saying with Kinsey, she had the ideal textbook upbringing. She has crutches. She has an Achilles that, if it shows its face, she's not equipped to handle. Go seek help. For real. It's if we're talking about life, business, relationships, finances, all that stuff, it's the best thing you can do for yourself. Inexpensive. I think it's $200, per visit. I go a couple times a month.
Insurance, I think I pay $15 every visit.
Yeah.
I don't know, insurance covers that.
At least it does for Guild. I think they realize that being in the mortgage industry or real estate industry is a
whole. You need help.
Yeah, talk to Keller Williams.
Yeah. I mean, I 100% agree with you on that. I mean, I was the same way. Like, growing up on paper looks like a great childhood, but like learning, like diving into it now, most of the emotional stuff that I learned came from baseball, because not so much from my parents. My parents were older when they had my brother and I, and extremely logical people. And I'm a very logical person when it comes to thinking through things. So when it came to emotions, I would like try to logically think through them instead of like feel them. Yeah. And understand.
Me
like,
too.
And,
for the record.
Right. Yeah. And instead of feel them and understand the feelings, I would try and logically explain them away. But then when baseball, it was about eighth grade was when freshman year of college or high school, when I started reading this book that my pitching coach, who's like my older brother now, gave to me. And it talked about mental toughness and controlling emotions and understanding emotions. That's when I really started to like dive into that stuff. But even at the time, like, I don't have anybody to explain it. So that was always like my fallback, was that's where it was. But now that I have a therapist, I can sit there and talk to him through this. And, you know, I was always like, oh, your emotional intelligence is really low. And talking to him, he's like, no, actually, it's
the opposite.
It's really high. You just need to start to understand those and get back. Cause it's, you know, just like anything, if you don't use it, you lose it. And once I got out of baseball and got into the business aspect of it, I started to lose that, like that emotional intelligence, that edge that I had when I was playing baseball. And, you know, you surround your, like a lot of the stuff when I first got in the business, way different. And, you know, I'm surrounded by got people that have been in the business for 15 to 30 years at this point out of my office that are like extremely high producers, and seeing how they interact and like as they're, you know, being older, you know, their emotions got the best of them. So I'm like, oh, that's just normal. And I just kind of rolled with it. And something bad would happen, I get pissed off and I let that linger.
That's normal.
Right. That's what normal is. And so now, like through therapy and learning all that and just learning like tools, is just, hey, taking a step back, thinking through it. Or like if you like the emails that I always tell, like if I get an email that I don't like, sure, let me get my anger out in this email and type it all out, and then I'm going to delete it.
Right.
Yep, and then come back. I got those emotions and those feelings out. Now I can go back and respond in a constructive way.
Another little nugget for the listeners. Most people don't know that you can't be logical and emotional at the same time. So emotional, think fight or flight, right? You're never going to be able to make a logical decision when the bear is chasing you.
Right.
Right. It's like, I need to build the fire. Well, there's a bear in the equation now. Like, fire doesn't make sense. I need to run.
Right.
Right. So how do you get to a place where you make the right decision? And it takes a little bit of both. But if you're in an argument or in a conversation and there's conflict, you are emotional. Just remove yourself from that until you can get to a place where you're not in fight or flight anymore. Calm down. Now we're ready to face this. Right. Now we can both make logical decisions. But if you're both heightened, there's no progress going to be made. So the nugget I learned, and hopefully you guys can take something away from this, is if you feel those guards go up, or if you feel your heart start beating a little bit fast and you're ready for conflict, take a minute, 20 minutes, so however long it takes to like come back down. And now we address the problem from a place of logic. That's how I get results.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. I past client, I saw that he posted, Josh, he posted this question on social media and I thought it was awesome. And then I reshared it myself not too long ago. What do you think is more important, emotional intelligence or just actual intelligence? EQ or IQ?
Well, I know a lot of smart people that are dumb. Yeah. So I'm going to go with emotional.
Yeah. That's mine too. I know plenty of, like you said, I know plenty of people that have high IQs with low EQ.
Right.
I don't know very many people that have high EQ and low IQ. Usually if you have a high EQ, you're going to have a pretty high IQ with that as well. And because it's going to allow you, like, that's the biggest thing, is you're going to be able to control those emotions to actually be able to use the intelligence set and logic that you have to be able to progress forward.
Well, it's just like sales for me. It's like, what is the desired result? Well, I want to convert the sale. Well, how do I do that? That's where the nuance comes into play. You got to have emotional intelligence to know, how do I navigate this conversation and get the desired result? That to me is intelligence, right? If I want X person to do Z, well, how do I get them to do that? But make it their decision. How do I influence them and persuade them that this is what they do? I want them to do X, right?
Right.
So I have to be emotionally intelligent to get them to do it in the first place. Sales 101, right, is
put yourself in their shoes.
Right. And I have to, and I'm very cerebral. I'm a very deep thinker. I almost like feel his thoughts, right? And I see things without them having to happen. I can go, that happens, this is going to be, I don't like that, so I'm going to do this instead. And it takes a high emotional intelligence to be able to do that in a poised way, you know, to get someone to be, to do what you want and have them feel like it was their idea, you have to be emotionally smart. You're not just going to like logically tell them that, hey, I need you to do this. And then, oh yeah, that's a great idea. Right. So for me, what is the right answer to that question?
I don't think there is, but yeah. I mean, in my opinion, I definitely think emotional intelligence is important.
I think low EQ leads to loneliness because you're going to exile yourself from a lot of people because you just don't know how to interact. You can be the smartest person in the world, but if you suck at communicating or navigating conversations, or who's going to want to be around you? So, I mean, to me, that's what I would say.
Yeah, and I mean, what's worse than being lonely? I mean, that's one of the
smart
worst things.
And lonely.
I mean, that's one of the worst things. Look at people in prison. The worst thing that they can do to you there, you're locked up with murderers and rapists, and the worst thing they can do is put you by yourself in a room.
Yeah.
For an extended period.
Face your demons. It's time.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not much worse than being lonely.
No, to me specifically, it's navigating conflict in a way that's mutually beneficial. That's the emotional intelligence, because I thought, because I'm so cerebral and I feel these things so deeply, that means I'm emotionally intelligent. The hard truth in that was I'm not. I'm trying to ram this conflict down Kinsey's throat and she's throwing up the walls. Why aren't we getting anywhere? You know what I mean? Yeah. But again, what I said in the beginning of this is I'm okay with being wrong because it means I can implement a fix. And for me, most people that are involved in my life professionally or relationally can count on me to address it one time, never have to address it again. Because I feel those emotions so deeply, I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want to be that frustrated. I don't want to take egg on the face ever again. Do it once and you can count on me that I'll find the fix. I'm sure you guys are the same way.
100%. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Embarrassment is a very powerful driver.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, you eat shit one time and you go, never again.
Yeah, probably from this one. Yeah.
The first time you got put in a choke that caught you by surprise and you're like, okay.
Yeah. I don't put my arm there.
No. Don't do that again. Which that match we were talking about.
Yeah, man, I'm stoked.
How's that gonna play out?
Well, I'm not exactly gonna get into my game plan on here, but I mean, I'm gonna take him down and submit him.
You see a dub?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I got to be confident, and I'm confident that I can beat this guy. I really am.
Where can I watch that?
You could come
live in person.
Yeah, dude, come on, man.
Next Saturday.
Yeah, it's next Saturday. Yeah, so you know, we don't have any tickets. Box tickets left.
My box tickets are gone.
Well, actually, I know a guy. Blake said he's trying to still sell a couple of those. So we got a box with all you can eat on and a private bartender in like a box, but the normal tickets are still for sale as well. So,
where is this out?
Red Flag.
Down in
Midtown area.
They're close to SLU.
Like off Locust.
Will this episode be out before then?
Yeah, this one will be out Friday.
So when, what date is that?
The 19th.
The 19th. What's your training look like up to the actual match?
Yeah, so I'm training 4 to 5 days a week right now, jiu-jitsu, and then I'm lifting the other days. But I mean, like I was telling my buddy Nick, who was over here last night, he's like one of my main training partners. He's, you know, he's a single guy, does all, you know, all he eats, lives, breathes jiu-jitsu. I mean, he's at the gym anywhere from 3 to 4 hours a day. And that's just what he
I can't do that.
Right. I don't have the time. I don't have the thing, you know, but this is what I was telling him. He's like, yeah, I'm training a lot, but I'm not like my intensity isn't like cranked up for every single round, every single
simple
thing.
Simple. Hey, let's just roll for a couple of minutes.
Exactly. And so it's like, I go in there my minimum 4 days a week. And every day that I'm in there, it's like, okay, intense. This is fucking intense. When the hard rounds are here, I'm 100%. I'm going as hard as I can, and I'm trying to implement a specific game plan for this specific opponent. And yeah, it's been great, man. I've definitely seen myself level up over the last couple of weeks because I'm working on some new stuff that I'm hopefully going to be able to showcase.
UFC is like the only sport I pay attention to anymore. I used to be a huge hockey, baseball, football guy, and like now I don't even know who the main quarterbacks are, collegiate.
I don't either.
NFL. Man. It's like, it's almost embarrassing.
I do fantasy football, and I was with some of my buddies this past weekend, and they're talking about it. I'm like, I do not know any.
I'm just here to have fun, guys.
Like, I just set the line up, and I feel like it keeps me in the, group chat. You know, yeah. Like, yeah, I pay the league fee just to
you
stay in the group chat
to charity.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I definitely don't. I've won the league twice, but
UFC, especially during COVID, it seemed like the only business that was doubled down. They're like, we're gonna do this shit, and we as consumers still had something. Like, nobody gave a shit about the bubble in basketball. Like, NBA tanked. Baseball was just brutal. Like, all of these things kind of fizzled out, or there was at least a moment there where they weren't high traffic, and Dana just went full bore.
Yeah, I said, fuck you guys.
Abu Dhabi.
Island, baby.
Yeah.
Let's
go. Yeah. Let's buy an island.
Or what? What's the place in Vegas? The
Apex.
The Apex? Yeah. Yeah, they had empty Apex, dudes scrapping it.
Heavyweight
out.
Title fights with no one in the crowd.
There was a Dustin Poirier fought in the Apex, and it was
I actually watched that fight last night. It was literally me and Nick were sitting here, and I just throw shit on YouTube, and it was the Dan Hooker and Poirier fight.
One of the best scraps ever.
We were watching
just two dudes in a ring.
I could watch this fight over and over again because it's just, I mean, two of the most intense guys just
for me,
their hearts out there.
That's the only thing I focus on anymore. I'm limited to leisure.
Yeah.
I say that, but I control my schedule. I can steal time if I need it, but UFC is like, one, it's always at my house.
Yep.
I have an awesome house for hosting. I love cooking food. That's like my favorite zen activity. And we get to watch UFC. So my friends come over, make good food, get the pay-per-view, and we just veg out till 12:30 in the morning.
The best.
Fucking awesome.
It's the best. I do the same thing here. I mean, my buddy, and this is like how me and Nick became good buddies. We were training together at the time, but I had mats in my garage. You know, this was like during COVID, everything's locked down. Him and I would train, you know, at least once a day in my garage. And then every Saturday night, you know, we're just sitting there, and it was just like, it's funny because it's just like me, Gina, and Nick. You know, it's like Nick, we always joke, like Nick's like the third wheel who's just always here. And like, we hang out and watch fights almost every Saturday. I mean, it's just,
I hear a lot of people talk about the disciplines of jiu-jitsu and what it does for them outside of jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
But I don't ever hear a lot of people talking about the fun.
Oh,
yeah. I'm like,
it's so fun. It's the most fun you can have, I think. I mean, I can't.
Well, you're a high school wrestler too, as was I. And you lose, if you're not in collegiate sports and you're used to being competitive, I feel like that's one of the darkest times I've had in my life, is playing three sports in high school, leave high school, don't play any sports, and you just look around. There's like no camaraderie, no accountability. I was militant with sports. If I didn't have sports, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I feel like that's been a good void for you to fill,
dude, it's
with jiu-jitsu.
Been the best thing for me. I mean, it's changed my life in so many ways. I mean, I started training. It was funny because I got into real estate and jiu-jitsu like almost the exact same time. I started jiu-jitsu like 3 or 4 months before I got my real estate license. And then, you know, ultimately took a couple months before I closed my first deals. But
you train like a maniac. This is... Yeah. For anyone listening, he doesn't just leisurely train once every couple of weeks. Like, this man is in the gym.
Oh yeah, I mean, if I don't do something every day, Gina knows, it's just like part of my daily requirement. I have to do something, and like it. And she, like, there was, it was, can't remember when it was. I think it was like right after Theo was born. She was like, "Get out of here, go train, because you're bothering me."
Yeah,
and like I just I changed.
When you had knee problems,
yeah,
she's like, "You're not yourself."
Right? Yeah, go strangle your friends, like get away from me. But yeah, no, it's changed. It's so fun because it's so difficult and it's so hard. And you're never gonna figure it out. You're never gonna know everything. You're never gonna beat everybody. There's always gonna be someone who's better at this aspect than you. And there's always going to be something to learn. Like, okay, maybe I suck at this guard, or I suck at this pass, or I'm really good at this pass on this side, but I can't do it on that side. So I gotta get good at that now too.
Well, I don't know anyone that does it, whether they're an athlete or just like a normie that is doing it for fun. I don't know anyone that leaves jiu-jitsu and's like, that sucked.
Yeah.
Or, well, maybe they do, but they go, that sucked, but it was awesome.
Yes.
Everyone speaks so highly of it because of what you're saying.
Well, it's just something every day that you can just challenge.
Like,
it's
hard not to get addicted, from what I understand. I haven't gone for that sole reason because I know I'm that type where I go balls deep, whether it's bourbon, competitive barbecue, golf, hunting, fishing, like I have no chill. So I just get obsessed with these things until they fizzle out my brain.
I'm the same way, man. It's like I go all in or I don't do it at all. If I can't like become obsessed with it and get really good at it, then I have like no interest in even starting. That's why I don't golf.
Now in my 30s, I got to be selective on what hobbies I pursue because I don't
have time.
Right.
Now that's where I made the mistake. I started jiu-jitsu this summer. It was awesome. Loved it. But I also play hockey. Hockey's always been a passion of mine. And hockey started up in August. And that's when my jiu-jitsu stuff stopped. Or my monthly things,
membership
ended. And I haven't signed back up yet just because it's hockey season now.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck, I want to get back into jiu-jitsu, but when the hell am I going to have time between hockey, coaching baseball, kids, work, and like,
yeah,
fuck.
Dating eventually, you know, like, I mean, yeah, got all those things. It's just like, you've only got so much time.
Right.
I love golf for probably the same reason you'd love jiu-jitsu. I'm not thinking about bills, work problems, home life. Like when I play golf and I'm okay, 9 handicap, so I could shoot 79 or I could shoot 90.
I'll have to get out and play.
But for me, it's that one versus one, right? Jiu-jitsu is different because you have an opponent, but
it's you.
But you're still
a mental game.
Yourself.
Yeah, it's a mental game. And golf, you know, you'll never be perfect. And I see a lot of it in business. It's usually like, you know, you see like an attorney or a doctor like on the golf course. No, there's so many little lessons that you can learn about somebody from just playing 18 holes with them. One, personally, where do I struggle? Right. I'm a head case for the most part, but I get out there and I learn to like bring it in. And two, like if you play with a stranger, you can make a best friend because it's such a, like
you're in a car together for 4.5 hours.
Yeah. It's such an awesome opportunity. Just like chat it up, see what, you know, learn about someone and like see the raw, real them.
Yeah, not you can see them when they fuck something up.
Not or the
see
social something. Media version yeah. of them or the version they want you to know of them. You see the real deal. And I love it for that reason.
The only thing I don't like about it, one of the reasons I don't think I've gotten, well, first of all, I'd have to just, it just takes a long time to get good at it.
Yeah.
And then, also, like, just the time commitment. Like you said, like, 4.5 hours. Like, fuck. Like,
that's,
when you
got
time.
Kids, that's a, it's tough. It might as well be a week.
Right, yeah. Like, yeah, because Gina's brother's, like, a very good golfer. Like, he's, you know, shoots under par sometimes. I mean, he's, I don't know all the right terms, but he's pretty good from my understanding.
Yeah.
But he golfs 2 to 3 times a week, you know?
I wish.
You know, he's.
I would prior to kids, I was playing 3, sometimes 4 times a week.
I got buddies in leagues, yeah.
Yeah, it's I was obsessed with golf, and which is, you know, being a baseball player, that's
sure.
They're
being
parallel.
Being a pitcher, especially, that's par for the course. But yeah, I mean, I was playing a lot and got pretty good at it. Now, like, I'm playing in a tournament on Friday, and
you're nervous.
Like, I've played 3 times this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first time.
First drive's going in the woods.
Like, oh, boy. This is. And so I need to get a shaft put on my driver just because having done, like, with all the weight training and CrossFit and stuff that we're doing, my swing's gotten so much faster. So I need to get, like, an extra stiff flex.
If you play, getting fitted for clubs is the biggest cheat code.
Really?
Yeah, because everyone has different mechanics. Even if you're not good, but you have a consistent swing, go get fitted. Having the right tools is insane.
Yeah, they'll get it to the length that you need. They'll put the head at a certain lie based on how you make contact with the ball. And,
center of gravity, yep. Grip size, all the shit. Yep. But golf's a big hobby of mine. I also want to pursue competitive barbecue.
Okay.
Now that's something, now you're speaking my language.
Bro. I know. So
dude, that's something I'd love to do with you.
I've talked to my buddies because we do. We crack open beers and we'll smoke something for 12, 13 hours on a Saturday and just, you know, sit and wait for UFC to come on. And you do it all, but competitive barbecue, most people don't know, is not the same as like
not a
brisket you would serve your family.
No, it's judged on the texture. It's judged on so many different aspects.
And you only get one little 1-inch
bite. That's all they're getting.
To blow their taste buds off. The thing about the chemicals and the MSG, sodium, salt, like the contents of that. If I served you 8 ounces of it, blow up like a balloon, because it's designed to be a powerful singular bite.
Right.
So that's been a goal, and it's kind of on my whiteboard of stuff I want to pursue. Is one, get certified as a judge. So I even have an aim point.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I make damn good barbecue at home, but what do these judges want from me? So now I've identified a target, and then just practice.
What kind of smoker do you use?
So I cook on a Weber. It's the bullet one. I think it's called Smoky Mountain, because that's what they use on certain barbecue circuits. So there's two different circuits. One is like they bring the Jambo pits out, like the trailers they pull behind a truck. They're massive. Like those guys are bringing their own meat and their own smokers, so they can dial in every little detail. They're bringing Wagyu briskets, you know, heritage pork, pasture-raised chicken, all this shit to be the best bite, right?
Snake River Farms.
Yes. Yeah. So I go to Annie Guns. It's right by my house. You actually got me a gift card. Oh, yeah. And I did. I bought some Snake River Farms with it. But there's another circuit that's more entry level, and they provide the pit. They provide the meat as a control.
Oh, so everybody's got the same.
One, it's not cost prohibitive. So like if you want to go, you know, it's kind of the 8-state region around Missouri. Go down there, get a $200 hotel. Super cheap. They provide the meat. I think it's like $600. There's a few around Missouri. So it's kind of a local circuit. But $200 for a hotel, stay in a piece of shit Days Inn or, you know, Holiday Inn Express, drive down there. They provide the meat and the smoker. So you really only have
to cart all that shit down there.
Yeah, you only have so many variables that you have control over. And that's been very, very high on my.
Yeah, well, it's like. Yeah, because you could see how the people who are super experienced have like all the nicest shit. They've been doing this for years, and they know where to get all the good meat. See how they'd have an advantage style.
I'm just a junkie for knowledge. So to me, it's like I want to learn. Do you brine it? Do you inject it? Do you, how long do you let the rub sit on it? What temp are you cooking at? What wood are you using? Like all this shit, because it interests me.
Yeah,
it's not so much the final product; it's the process. Same thing with, like, why am I into bourbon? Why am I into wine? Well, it's not because it's a shiny Blanton's bottle on my shelf. Like, to be honest, I never reach for that bottle, and it's the one that everyone that gets into bourbon sees.
I'm not, like, everybody, it's okay.
Yeah, it's solid. If you can get it for $60,
$60 is perfect. I'll never spend more than $60 for a bottle of
Blanton's. But I like wines and tobaccos, you know, cigars, bourbons, because of the artisan effect. Mm-hmm. Right. If you come over to my house and you share a meal, and I pull out a wine, it's not the typical, you know, Duckhorn or Decoy or Camus that everyone knows. Something that has a story behind it. Right. So this comes from a little place that's, you know, a micro winery that's putting out some of the craziest shit because of the process that they've kind of pioneered. To me, that's exciting.
Cool.
Same thing with tobacco. Same thing with bourbon. Like, I like little elements, knowledge, the pieces, like bourbon's made out of Kentucky. It has to be 51% of corn, but that's all great. Tell me something new.
Yeah,
tell me something exciting.
Unique about this bourbon.
Yeah, I like that artisan effect. Golf, all my hobbies, I feel like selfishly have some element of knowledge, wisdom behind it. And that's what I find myself going towards.
What's your go-to bourbon?
I'm an Old Forester fanboy.
Are you?
Yeah. Old Forester, so
like that little bit of a banana taste at the end of it.
So I drink the bottle and bond mostly. That's okay. I call that like my daily driver.
Okay.
It's got colorings in it. It's got additives. It's not like the sexiest for the purists out there, but if you're new into bourbon, experienced into bourbon, it's $50. You can find it on pretty much any anywhere. Shelf. We went to Louisville and saw the Old Forester distillery. I liked it previous to that, but they make a bottled and bond. It's 100 proof. It's not blow your hat off. It tastes amazing, and you can get it for $50 on any shelf.
It's like Heaven Hill. Heaven Hill, which
they
for a while was a tough bottle to get, but I mean, I've been seeing them at Deerberg's all over the place, and they're bottled and bond.
Yep.
And That's a really good one. It's like 50, 60 bucks.
Yeah. Missouri's a tough state to be a bourbon enthusiast because we're like out of 50 states, I think we're like 47th to get distribution. Mm-hmm. So we travel. If I ever drive to Florida, I'm stopping in Kentucky and Tennessee to see if I can't find something exotic. But that's my daily. I've had a 2017 Thomas Handy, which is a Buffalo Trace product. People know the antique collection. And that was like my grail experience with whiskey. I'm always going to be in pursuit of that. And I don't think I'll ever beat it because it was that good. Yeah. And for me, having a culinary interest, having a taste for food, liking food and flavors, I feel like plays well with bourbon, cigars, wine. Not just from the like experience. But you can taste the shit. When we went to California for the first time, they're telling me it smells like tennis balls and shit. I'm like, what? But you learn and develop because you know what shit tastes like as one that makes good food. You can grab onto it a little better. So I love that stuff. Golf, bourbon, fishing, hunting. I would love to get in shape to go out west and, dude. Talk about like grail. That's one of my best friends films content for Whitetail Properties. They've got two YouTube series that one's a migratory birds and one's a big game. And he's New Mexico hunting elk and doing all this like crazy stuff. And I'm like, dude, that looks amazing. But you have to be in shape.
Oh yeah.
Like
there was a friend of mine, Jake Arvold. He just killed a giant bull elk. And just like he was telling the story, or, you know, actually I want to get him on here. He's got a podcast too, but he just killed this giant bull. And I know he had to like walk it miles,
multiple trips. Yeah.
You know, I think he made one trip out and then like hung the rest of it, went back and got the rest of it the next day.
Yeah. Gnarly.
You know, his wife. Yeah. You gotta be climbing the mountains with, you know, 100-pound backpack on.
Now last week there's this place called Adventure Unknown in Fenton. And the owner of it is a big hunter, and he was telling, they've got their clubhouse, they've got animals and everything that they've killed and all that. He has one, I forget what it was. It's a ram, some sort of ram from Alaska, but he had to hike. It was like a 3-day hike.
That's one of the hardest hunts domestically that you can do.
So they shot it at a distance, and he's like, that's the thing is like, you don't know if you killed this. So we had to hike up this mountain to see if we even got there. We got there and I'm like, oh, thank God. I did kill this thing.
Now you got to go down and up the other side.
Well, yeah. And so he's like, this was the hardest hunt I've ever been on in my life. Cause one, you had to go up the mountain. He's like, that was the easy part. Getting up the mountain was easy. Cause now we have to come back down carrying this animal. And he's like, there's three of us. He goes, there's me, my guide, and then just a guy to come and help carry shit.
Yeah.
Pack out.
Yeah. And he was saying, he's like, on the way back down, he's like, and he's like, you're doing it at night and it's pitch black. So you're like, you're taking your rifle and you're like poking it down like in front of you on the hill. And then you're taking a step and then you're poking it in front of you again and you're taking a step.
Yeah, like, so you want to make sure you don't slide down that mountain.
14,000 feet.
Yeah. he's like, my feet, he's like, my entire, like both my feet were just blood.
You learn what kind of man you are in something like that, especially out west where the terrain's treacherous. You got 600-pound animal that you're, you know, pulling out in quarters and then you got the rack. I would love to do that. You got to get in serious shape. I don't know anyone of my friends that could off the couch go do something like that.
Yeah.
How do you train for something like that?
There's a peninsula and then the body of Mexico. It's in between. They pull out the biggest fish every year from this place, but it is not sexy to vacation to. So I grew up doing that, and that fishing is, it's a drug. If you catch, you know, 180-pound marlin, it's a 4 or 5 hour fight. You got to be in shape to do it, but it's not anything like mountain shape.
Right.
So we're going in November to Mexico to fish for a couple days.
Cool.
And that, I like the idea of eating, you know,
eating
elk
meat. Yeah.
My buddy just went to Alaska. Now he's got 200 pounds of halibut. That to me is exciting. So I'm hoping to stock the freezer when I'm out there.
Well, it tastes different, man. It tastes different when it's something you killed or something you caught. You know, I've only killed
real food.
That and the like, especially if you're the one that killed it or caught it. Just like
You got a relationship.
The pride, with the pride that you have, like how proud you feel, like you're feeding.
There's something primal there.
Yeah,
for sure, 100%. You know that feeling like you get when you catch a fish, like oh, I got one. Like that's like a primal feeling that we've been feeling for thousands.
Providing, feeding your family, you know, as cavemen, I'm sure. Yeah. You know, cooking with fire was, you know, there's something in there that this kind of fishing is different. This ain't like Florida. 6-7 miles out catching red snapper, which is awesome. Do it if you're down there and you can. But this is 50 miles out and catching Goliath.
Just massive. Monsters.
Yeah. And it, dude, it does something for you. So
I remember took a trip to Cabo in like 2015 or 16 and we went deep sea fishing. I didn't last very long. I got drunk, drunk the night before and getting out there on that. I didn't last very long out there. I think I was asleep on the boat for the majority of it. But yeah, I guess there's some good deep sea fishing out off the coast of Cabo.
Yeah.
So
that's some of the best between there, Hawaii, and San Diego. Mm. That's a massive, big tournament. Big boats come in. They fish that like hell. But dude, let's share some drinks soon.
Yeah,
play some golf, cook some barbecue.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Get a UFC thing going on.
Yeah,
so
that'd be awesome.
What's the next big fight coming up?
Dude, this fight's this past weekend.
That was Perea, man. That dude is so
Khalil. What a warrior.
That dude's stock went up, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I really liked Khalil going into it. Just I've listened to him. I think he's been on Rogan like 3 times, and every single time I just like, man, I like this guy more and more. He just got a cool story. You know, he was warrior. Like was a 300-pound dude, just got into was going through depression, drug addiction, and then was in a band, like a metal, like hardcore, like screamo band, and like touring the country. And
he's like the nicest guy ever, listen to him.
Yeah, he's like so soft-spoken and like sweet-sounding and like emotional. And then he kind of got into MMA, I want to say, when he was like in his early 20s, and here he is now. And then he went to Thailand for a few years and like became super involved with the Thai and their culture and like, just awesome dude, but man, that was hell of a fight.
Pajeda.
Yeah, R's or H's in Portuguese.
Yeah, Pajeda. That dude is a freak specimen.
I saw a thing recently that was like comparing him to Khabib as far as like his wins and like what he's done. And dude, he's only been
8 fights or something.
Yes.
Well, that's because he was a big time kickboxer.
Yeah,
that's,
he's 100.
Because that's where him and
well,
him
it's
and
dominance,
Izzy, right? Izzy,
winning, but winning by conviction are two different things.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's only one fight gone to decision. I think that was the one with Jan Blachowicz. I'm pretty sure that was his only fight that went to decision.
Well, and he's not the same fighter. That guy's a spectacle, and to watch Roundtree hold his own for as long as he did.
Stare down at the beginning, I was like. Fuck.
I know.
I'm not built for that.
No,
dude. That's...
Well, and Khalil knocked him down at one point. Mm-hmm. And like, you're like, oh my God.
What is the next big fight, though? Next pay-per-view?
We got.
That'd be 308, right?
Yeah. So that's.
I did the math one time on how much money it costs to be a UFC fan. And if you're doing the math at home, it's like $1,200 to $1,500 a year.
Yeah.
I tried.
Who's our next one?
Max Holloway.
Ilya Topuria and
Max
Holloway.
Is my favorite fighter. I went to Kansas City last year and watched him fight.
Got Whitaker and
Chimaev. Yep. And Khamzat coming back. Hopefully he actually makes it to the cage this time. There always seems to be some reason that he doesn't.
Health, yeah.
Yeah, he's always got some sort of health issue. He always gets sick.
The dude that's blind in when I, Magnumedov.
Yeah.
Magomedov.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that'll be a good one. I'm so pumped to see, you know, Max against Ilya. Max get that belt back.
October 26th.
Max is like...
Oh, that's an early one. That's at 1 p.m.
Oh, where is it? Hey, where it's at?
No.
It's got to be somewhere else.
Dude, so I'll say this. I saw Max last year when he fought in Kansas City. Watching it at home is almost better. I swear, dude, if you're not on the floor level seats and looking up into the octagon,
yeah,
watching it at home is a better experience.
I can see that. I've only been to one UFC event. It was the one here, which was awesome. It was amazing. We had really good seats, and it was. But in like being in the building, there's something to that. But
I got hammered that day.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that.
Absolutely. I don't even remember who fought.
It was awesome. It was amazing. Like we had like perfect. I thought our seats were perfect because we were like this would like be... cage level on the lower bowl. So we were like looking straight at it. And
well, that was the problem. So I was looking down and the top of the octagon was at their head. Mm-hmm. So strikes, I couldn't see anything. I felt like I was watching the Jumbotron more than I was the actual fight.
Yeah. And then there's a piece to it where I like hearing the commentators. I like hearing what they're saying. They're going to spit something off that you didn't know. Like that's the one piece of it going to it live that I didn't enjoy as much. I like listening to the commentators. I like hearing what they're saying and informing me about a fighter that I didn't know, or they'll say something that I didn't notice. Like, ooh, he's limping on his left leg. I think that kick hurt him or whatever it is. But there is something to the being there and the energy of the building.
That's amazing. Especially like what they did at the Sphere.
Yeah.
La Noche.
The mechanics of trying to pull that off is insane. Applaud the UFC for doing that, but they've also mastered the viewer experience at home. Mm-hmm. Dude, the camera angles, and you're seeing everything in detail. And like, I've been to two fights now. I can't say that it's better. It's a hell of a lot more expensive going in person, but
I'll tell you what, this one that Zach's in is pretty fucking cool. The Red Flag place.
I'll be there. I'm going.
It's like
an underground fight club. Yeah.
I'll show
you a little video.
It's pretty sweet. But yeah, this the 309 fight card. Two main events, John Jones and Stipe.
And then
Charles Oliveira and Michael Chandler.
And Bo Nickel.
Bo Nickel and Paul Craig.
Dude. Yeah. That's like wrestler extraordinaire to like arguably one of the best. I mean, he's one of the best jiu-jitsu guys in MMA for sure. So that'll be a really, really cool guy.
I'm gonna say something controversial. John Jones is the best fighter of all time.
I don't think that's controversial. I mean,
it's bizarre to me that people do.
No, I mean he definitely is.
That
man in the room in a room with any other person in the world. I don't care who it is, John. And you say, all right, one of you has to come out alive. I'm putting my money on John Jones every single time. The best man in
martial arts, fight IQ, win streak, just. I mean, yeah, for me, and we've been watching him since we were kids.
Right.
The beginning of our, UFC journey, and that dude is a freak, and I'm pumped for this fight.
Dude, me too.
Stipe is too. Stipe is no slouch, but the marketing behind it, the build-up, the anxiety, I'm ready for that.
Me too.
You think they'll ever have the McGregor fight?
I've given up on Conor.
Yeah. Me too. I think I have as well.
I hate saying that. But it's also like he fucked Chandler over big time.
Oh, dude, just drag him on for 2 years?
Yeah. Go sail off into the sunset, dude. Yeah. There's many people that are
drive your
hungry.
Ferrari yacht. And
which I'm not dogging.
I'd be probably doing the
but
same
But don't
thing.
Tell us you're coming back to fight. Let's be real.
Right.
Yeah, it's hard to be hungry or, hard to be that kind of fighter when you're sleeping in silk sheets or whatever the Bernard Hopkins saying is. It's like it's hard to be a savage when you're sleeping in silk sheets or whatever it is. Yeah.
Right.
We
always like to end it with one last question. We call it the tombstone game. Here lies Anthony. What's it say on your tomb? Or Angelo. Here lies Angelo. What's it say on your tombstone?
I think about this because I know you guys do this, and I'm always conflicted. I want what I want it to say and what it says may be two different things. But
what do you want it to say?
I want it to say someone that you could depend on. To me, that's my identity, at least in my own head. I want to be dependable. And if I could do that, I feel like I'd have a successful life.
That's awesome, man.
Love it.
Yeah.
Sweet, man. Well, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate you
having
me. Appreciate
you.
Thank you.
This was awesome. All right, guys. Appreciate you guys tuning into the episode. If you could, hit that like button. If you haven't subscribed already, hit that subscribe button for us. We'd really appreciate that. And we will see you next time.